Welcome to Scrappy ABM. This is your podcast with practical playbooks that don't break the bank. In this podcast, we dig into the exact playbooks that ABM practitioners are using today to get their first ABM program off the ground. We'll dig into how they're using their current tech stack in order to create scrappy programs that rely more on creativity than new technologies. So if you're looking for how to get ABM off the ground in your organization in the next 90 days, let's dive into this episode.
Hello and welcome to Scrappy ABM. This is your podcast with practical playbooks that don't break the bank. This is your host, Mason Cosby. And today I'm joined by Chris Collier, who is the VP of Marketing at EHS Insight. Chris, thank you so much for joining me today.
Mason, thanks for having me. I'm super excited to be here and to talk about some snappy ABM that we're doing at EHS Insight, other marketing.
Love it. I reached out because you happen to be on this little customer advisory board for this company called InReach. So I know that as we're digging into it, you guys have got some really effective ABM programs that are already up and running. And as we were starting to prep for this, I always love to just start with a relatively simple question, because most people think about ABM, the accounts that we're going after. So I'm always curious, like, how did you even determine the companies or the targets that you wanted to go after for your ABM program?
It's definitely a combo of ICP and then intent within the ICP. I tell everybody, any kind of marketing, and then specifically with ABM, you've got to know your customer inside and out. And it's not a one and done type situation, right? Like, we'll do 6 month ICP deep dives to see if what we're seeing and what we're saying and who we're trying to target is matching still, and do we need to evolve and pivot and move forward? But ultimately, ICP and then matching that with intent, which is built on the ICP. Industries we played well with, types of customers, types of companies, size of companies, and fine-tuning that within the campaigns and strategies that we launch.
I love it. So essentially doing a biannual look back at your ICP to just say, is this still the right market for us to be pursuing? Are we seeing engagement in this space? Are we still playing well with this space? That's been one thing that, man, I just did not anticipate would impact us as much, but just some of the regulatory changes that we've seen in the past couple of months have made industries that we played super well with become industries that we don't play as well with right now. It sounds like just an biannual look back. Now, I'm curious, how are you structuring that meeting and who's involved in that kind of a conversation?
It's definitely a combo of customer success, product, sales, and marketing, right? Because we're all touching the same personas, the same story at different parts of the story. And so, whereas you could do a pretty good job of maybe getting 80% there with one department, it really does tell a better story if you've got everybody involved, because you've got top of funnel, the buyer's journey, then you've got after implementation, and then maintaining those relationships with the customer after they've already launched our platform. But then also product too, where we're seeing we partner with first. And so where's the market going and how is the changing the customer, but then also how is the customer changing the market? So we try to do like a 7,000 dimension look at everything as we're changing it. And sometimes too, we may not have a meeting. Maybe I'll do 99% of the legwork and present it and then let senior leadership take a look at it. And then they'll come back to me and go, we're missing things here and we need to include this, or this isn't relevant any longer. But yeah, so definitely making sure we've got everybody heard, even though maybe my department does a majority of the work.
Something I've said often is it's easier to correct than it is to create. So I think if you just get everybody in a room, it's way harder to know, okay, what's actually important and relevant. But if you see something and you're like, ah, like that's not right, or we're missing things, it's just easier to point out flaws for a lot of people than it is to think it up in the first place. So it sounds like you're doing the hard work of creation and then allowing the rest of the leadership team to weigh in more through correction.
I'm really glad that you brought that up, because that's something that I stress with my team too, especially maybe there's a project we're all working on and I'll come back with a lot of red tape, a lot of redactions, right? And I tell them, it's so much easier for me to come in and edit it. You did the hard work. And so don't look at it as me like totally screwing things up. It's more of I'm coming in with a different set of eyes and we're editing it. Now, I will say this, my team will probably back me up. I really have to do that much editing because my team's great. But no, I think what you said should actually be said more, because I think a lot of people are like, oh man, I'm just getting everything just destroyed. I spent all this time on this, but ultimately it's easier for someone to come in and do the fine tuning, take it from 90 to 100% versus do the whole heavy lifting of 1 to 90%.
I love it. So that's how we then work through targeting. And as you look at kind of that look back, does that then set where the organization is focused for the next 6 months? Like, how long do you look at it through that lens from a targeting perspective?
Oh, I wouldn't say if, think of it in terms of where we're always moving forward, but maybe we change out the tires or it's an oil change or something along those lines. And so maybe it's just small, minute changes as we're seeing the market change and our ICP change. And the sprints are probably even shorter because I do a quarter over quarter and then an H, a half over a half deep dive into our customer acquisition cost and what channels are generating the most money. You know, of the specific industries, what's the average ASP as we're diving into some of these? So, you know, if we didn't know before, it's like, well, okay, we've got really good plays here. We should keep playing here. And if we're looking to go further upstream from an enterprise standpoint, raise that ASP, how do we do that? But then also what's been working in those industries that we can then pivot to other industries that maybe we haven't penetrated before, or maybe we still have a lot of market share that we can grow into. So it's definitely like even more so than, it's more frequent than even like a 6 month sprint. It's more even like quarter over quarter. And even sometimes then too, it's okay, we need month over month. And let's just look at this really granularity with a lot of granularity and dive in and do it that way.
That's helpful context of the ICP doesn't change everything for the next 6 months. It's not a complete pivot every time we look at it. It's refinement and gradual adjustments based on primarily market trends, which smart. And then as far as where we're focused for programs, it's a quarter over quarter theme. Or so again, not that there's a dramatic change every time we look at the ICP or every quarter, but how are we engaging this audience right now for the next 3 months and trying to push them into their engagement or pipeline?
Yeah, I think you just said it way better than I've seen this too many times with other marketing programs. Like, it's just set it and forget it and not really getting into the weeds. There's something to be said about get the work done, launch it, and then let it breathe a little bit. I've been doing it long enough that my philosophy is you can start to see like this is either going to be a success and now it's refinement and tweaking it, or no, this is going to just waste a bunch of money. We need to cut our costs right now, our losses, and then move forward. And I think too, that's actually to bring it back to ABM and some of the other campaigns we're doing. We're also evaluating every 6 weeks of what we're doing and what we find successful. And so ABM, all of our ads within ABM, also from an SEM perspective, what was working three months ago, or even 5 weeks ago, 6 weeks ago, is it now still working? And what tweaks do we need to do in order to either lower the CPL, get higher engagement, bring in more conversions? And it can, and that then from there, that's also multi-step too, because you're looking at what are the keywords, what's the ads, what's the landing pages, what's the carrot, I like to call, what's the enticing thing that's trying to attract people in there to either convert or want to learn more about your company. So we're also doing that too, where it's a kind of evaluation, like tweaking and being stagnant.
I think it's super helpful for people to hear, again, same targets, different ways of engaging. Because I think what we often see in Europe, we're like, I know our program works. Like, these tactics work. Like, paid media always crushes. This ad set always works. Let's get different people. And like, maybe. But again, if you know who your best customer is, the question is just simply, how do I get more conversations with them? And then being tactic agnostic, as long as we're getting in front of these right audiences, I think is the right way to think about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I think too many times people just kind of, really good examples, the game, the SEM game, from even 10 years ago. That's really where I cut a lot of my teeth in my career, was an SEM, SEO perspective. And what was working then just doesn't work now. And I think too, with ABM and actually almost all other channels, is what was working 6 months ago, what was working a year, isn't working anymore. It's the hot topic. Everybody's talking about AI. And over the weekend, like, I was reading a ton of articles about HubSpot and other major players where like they lost 80% of their traffic due to AI. And so we're not getting hit with that, but I saw the writing on the wall when AI came out, and I said to my team, we need to keep in mind that 80% of SEO agencies are probably going to go the way of the dodo. It's going to get real volatile. It's going to get real bad. And so we need to pivot and make sure we're making adjustments now so we don't get hit harder, because this is where it's going to be going in the future. And I have a saying that change is inevitable. So the key to success in life is to embrace change, because no matter what, you could fight it, it's still going to happen. And so constantly evolving, constantly evaluating your processes is one way to sidestep it, because then you're being more proactive than reactive, which typically most people are reactive. And it's no fault to that person or the team, because let's be honest, in marketing today too, everybody's wearing like 16 different hats. And so you're stretched really thin, and some things are going to fall through the crack. Like, it's just inevitable in the way of things these days.
I'm really curious, as you think through specifically changing up the programs and making sure that you're maintaining a more fresh and engaging way for getting in front of this target audience, how are you thinking through and evaluating channel mix?
It goes back to ICP, and where is my ICP? I had old marketing leaders when I was starting out my career. Oh, let's take an ad in Delta magazine because a lot of these people are flying. And I'm like, this is a giant waste of money, because when I'm flying, like, sure, I'm reading the magazine, but it's still not the same as delivering a good message at the right time when the person is ready, or at least top of mind. So what I look at is, how can you maximize your dollars spent to stay top of mind? I also look at it too. So it's top of mind, but then intent. Somebody who's searching organically or even paid and they fill out a form, that's going to be a little bit more higher intent. So I measure it of, where's our ICP? How can we control the cost of our CPL? What channels have historically not just brought in MQLs, but turned into SQLs, pipeline and close one? And that's how I measure everything, especially from a customer acquisition cost, because you'll get some channels where, man, it brought in a ton of MQLs. And we had this happen where it just crushed it, and it never brought in pipeline, and it rarely closed. And so I'm like, yeah, it looks great top of funnel, but if we keep reporting to the board and my boss, the CEO, that this is happening, somebody gets underneath the hood and they're going to go, yeah, you're crushing it and you spent all this budget, but we're in the red because you were bringing any closed won. So I always look at it channels of, I work backwards. What's going to bring us the most closed won? Look at it historically, making sure we're casting the net for where our ICP is. So I'm not on Facebook. I'm not advertising on Instagram. We've experimented with Reddit. We're predominantly Bing, Google, organic. And then we've got our ABM channels. But, you know, you get everybody every day like, oh, have you tried TikTok? I'm like, yeah, TikTok's great if it's not a B2B SaaS company that is looking to sell a platform that's $40,000 to $250,000 to get in there and implement it. Just not where the audience is.
I love the constant auditing of CPL and all the way to revenue. I've talked with so many teams that have only looked at it from an MQL perspective, or sometimes even just a CAC perspective, and they're not even looking at the other side of CAC, which is LTV, of like, well, we may have gotten a lot of deep customers, like, were they worth any of these?
Right.
I love the deep dive analysis across all of it. I'm curious, because one of the things that people look at is cheap channels, but the other side that goes directly with channels is, what are we actually sending people? So I'm curious, how are you actually thinking through content and offers and making sure that you've actually got something engaging within those channels?
That's still something that I think you're always going to be searching for, that magic bullet or the secret sauce or how you're going to crack that nut. I'm just dropping all the analogies right now. But, and so that's also a constant evaluation as well. Like, what was important to ICP XYZ amount of years or months ago maybe isn't the same. And so we're always, we, like a lot of other technology companies, we utilize OKR. My department's actually one of the only ones that utilizes OKRs. Everybody else has got their other ways that they are managing their team. But how I always like to create it, I'm like, okay, let's create a couple long form pieces of content that's going to be relevant. We do a lot of research, see what's relevant these days. What do we need to bring out? Something that we can float up there. But my growth and RevOps manager, he also did a wonderful job to match a lot of our content to the buyer's journey. So from an awareness to an evaluation to a deciding, negotiating. And then that's how we chop up a lot of our ABM and intent campaigns is, okay, based on success and previous years, days, months, typically, what would be the kind of information that somebody who's seeing our ads or clicking on our ads or searching for us would want to read? And on top of it, we don't gate anything. The only thing we gate is if they want a quote or a free trial of the platform. Everything else is open, because in 2025, you shouldn't be gating everything or anything. You should have it just open where you can click on it. Now, marketing teams should be doing their due diligence, where on HubSpot, we've got our buttons and their CTAs, and somebody has clicked on it and they've read it XYZ amount of time. And then that's another one we'll go in and be like, okay, what's the interaction rate? Maybe time on page, somebody who's clicking and reading these things. And so that's another form that we'll use to evaluate the content and the success of the content. And do we need to do more of this, do less of this? We also pull our sales team. And right now we're doing a big video push. Video is not, I believe in video. I love video. It's just something we just don't have a lot of, period, yet. And so we're trying to change that. And I have ideas. You're in the shower, you're mowing your lawn, and ideas are just popping up left and right. And so I thought, okay, how about this idea? And my product marketing manager suggested this. She's like, why don't we send out a survey to marketing, sales, CS, and part of our product team of what videos they would like to see? What would help you close more deals and or share information with prospects or just general? And it actually was aligned with what we were thinking. And so that's another way too. Well, since we're on the front lines, we're like, what do you guys want to see versus us dictating the content that you should be putting out there? What is the content that would get you most excited to then show to prospects and also our customers when new products get rolled out?
I love the inclusion of specifically two teams that are not as frequently talked about in content. One, RevOps. That is that RevOps was the one to map out the actual content to the customer's journey. I recommend that all the time. I've just not known that RevOps has done it historically. So like one, that sounds very interesting to even identify. I would love to understand their thought process and how they mapped out all the content. That sounds awesome. And then two, just like a concerted effort with sales to do more video. I can guarantee for the past, 8 years running, number one marketing trend, video is on the rise. It's the trend that will never go away. Yeah, the more you can incorporate video, the typically I've sound better. But I'm curious, as you're doing these pushes, do you get any kind of pushback where people are just like, I have time for that? Like, how do you handle some of that pushback that I'm sure you're getting?
Oh, like as far as I'm asking for your opinions and looking to see what you want. And Mason, we're a little bit of a special case here where we get a lot of feedback from our teams. And it's a really healthy closed loop. And I believe in a trifecta between marketing, sales, and CS. No team is greater than the other. It's a true triangle. We call ourselves the revenue team, essentially, right? Marketing is the guy wearing the sandwich board on the corner, screaming at everybody to come in the restaurant. Sales is taking the order and putting the money in the cash register. And then the wait staff or the cooking staff is CX. They're the ones that are actually taking care of the customer, making the product, making the food, serving up the experience. And so without those three, you can't do a good job. And so my sales leader and my CS leader, like we're all very close, both professionally and personally as well. And it's something that I have to have when I'm part of a company. Because another thing too, when you're looking at all of these different channels and you're evaluating things, and I'm looking at MQL, SQL, pipeline, down to close won, close loss, it's not a matter of if one of those is failing. We know the pinpoint, like here's the bottleneck. And my sales leader never comes to me and goes, the leads are garbage. But I will ask him, I'm like, hey, we're not creating pipeline like we should be. Are we the ones that need to be underneath the microscope? And do we need to pivot and do things differently? Because maybe we need to bring more MQLs in, because it is a number of games at the end of the day too, depending on your conversion rates. And a lot of times it'll be like, okay, no, we need a little bit more numbers, or no, it's on my team. My team needs to be pushing harder and opening deals, and maybe they're sandbagging a little bit. To answer your question, a lot of the time we get a ton of involvement and engagement, and maybe it's the department we've created where it's not toxic. It's very open. Everybody's opinion is valued. Or maybe they just think I'm funny. I don't know. But I've worked for other companies where it's any kind of involvement. But luckily here at EHS Insight, it's just not the case.
A podcast episode to figure out how you're doing that, because I think you're doing something a lot of people wish they had. So I am curious, as you've been setting up the ABM program, how are you guys measuring early success so that you keep going?
We've been lucky with the Enrich platform, because when I started evaluating the platform back in spring of maybe 2023, I'd used Terminus. Terminus is great, not as great as Enrich. And so I was on the demo with the rep, and they started showing me the out of the box reports. And I'm like, wait a second. Because of the native integration with HubSpot, you guys can show what's been influenced, what hasn't been influenced. And then what close one influence? And they're like, yeah. And I was like, this is worth its weight in gold because I can quickly stand this up. And if somebody asks me, are our ABM platforms or campaigns being successful? I'm like, yes, there's a close one number and that's how it's moving up. I think how fast we were able to get this stood up too, is just the platform was so easy because sometimes it can take a lot of hair pulling and teeth pulling just to get things integrated and going. I told my team, we got to get it going. We got to get a baseline. Some scrappy campaigns started in order to start seeing what's engaging, what's not engaging. And so, you know, when we got it going, it probably wasn't as polished as I would have liked it, but we started to see the interaction and what people were liking, disliking, engaging with, not engaging with.
It sounds like because of Enrich, you had out-of-the-box reporting that you could easily just showcase and say, we're seeing account progression. So my big question just always, as you're standing up that first program, is what was the tipping point or how did you know that you should keep going? Because ABM still is a long journey for a lot of people.
Yeah, I think for us, it was the fact that we could show what was pre-post and close one influenced opportunity. And that was another thing too, that I had to educate my team, educate my boss. And my boss said, this sounds very logical. Even parts of our PE telling them that it's not a matter of close one, it's influence. And former boss of mine, he and I used to discuss this all the time. ABM is a lot like a billboard as you're traveling down the street for plumbing. You don't need a plumber the first through 10 times, maybe even 50 or 60 times you've gone down the street. But that 61st time and you needed that plumber, you're like, that's what I need. And so we say, did the campaigns close this deal? Yeah. Did it not close a deal? Yeah. Because it's not a matter of black and white. It's more of that gray area that it influenced it. And because we were staying in front of these folks the entire time. And that's why we've matched a lot of our campaigns to switch up the terminology, the vernacular, everything about the campaigns as the reps are moving them down the sales cycle. So a little bit of automation and then a little bit of aligning the messaging going back to ICP.
One of the best pieces of advice that I heard from a CRO that was setting up ABM for the first time is he removed the sourced metric from the marketing team because it just eliminated the challenges around, are we trying to actually get credit for marketing or get credit for sales? In marketing, I want to make sure that you've touched almost every account that we were engaging. So if you do that, you did your job. And if we hit the revenue goal, we all did our job together. And they've had one of those thriving ABM program that I think I've ever seen, just because alignment was far easier. You weren't battling over credit.
The way I look at it is, one, so we keep source. And the reason why I keep source and attribution is because I want to see, I got to know what channels are working, which ones aren't working. And then also from a CPL standpoint. But then also two, I look at how pipeline was created. And we track attribution. Like, we've got offline sourcing. We require our team to not only source 20% of their pipeline, but they've got to close 20% of the quota. That's on top of the 95% sourced from marketing. But the way I look at it is, we're all part of the same team. And so if we're crushing it, pipeline's being created, and they're not closing, it's not a them problem. It's an us problem. And we need to stand up to campaigns, or maybe there's different content assets we've got to create. Maybe there's sales enablement training. Maybe there's other sales enablement assets they need. And so that's how I look at it, where if they're not succeeding at the rate they think they should be succeeding at, that's when I'll, you know, okay, we need to work backwards and see what's the problem. And yeah, because then it's not a them versus us. It's a, we've got a collective program. It's another thing too, where I tell everybody, failure is not in my vocabulary. It's all learning lessons, and you got to learn fast, and you got to fail fast, and also fail fast before it turns into a very expensive failure. But look at it, learn from it, stop, chop it up, relaunch, and then it's experimenting. It's the scientific method, and you're just doing that over and over. I tell everybody, they're like, oh, I goofed up on this. I'm like, cool. Did you learn something from it? Yeah. Like, great. Let's move on. There's no sense in hampering. You knew that you made a mistake, and now we're just going to pivot and do something else. That took a little bit of change with my team when I started working with them like that. And the part of it is because I had so many bad managers and leaders when I was growing up in my professional career that they would dangle that over your head for months. And I'm like, this is extremely toxic. Do you think I'm an idiot? If you're treating me like you think I'm an idiot, I'm not going to do that again. Okay. I put my finger in the socket once. I'm not going to do it again.
something that I'm trying to help actually some of our team members figure out, because again, at the end of the day, I owned every mistake because now I can't get fired, but I'm realizing I've almost stripped the learnings from our team because I take credit for every failure, where I step in on anything that's new and experimental, and then I fail, and then they just only do what's safe and known. And there's a balance there. I'd be curious, how are you striking that balance with your team?
That's a really great question. How I design my teams is that, of course, I'm in charge of the overall strategy. Now, with the help of our other senior leadership and part of the different sections of the team as well. But on top of that, I'm a utility player. So each one of my team members, they have their own fiefdom segment of marketing. And then I'm a utility player. So to give them capacity, I will come in and I will help them do it. When they succeed, it's always on them. Maybe even if I carried 90% of it, right? If they fail, we talk about it individually. But then when it comes down to leadership asking questions, it was on me, because ultimately it's my department. And so I'm the one that's going to stand in front of, I'm going to stand in the way of the bullets so my team doesn't get it, just to create a safe nest. Because my big thing that I promote is experimentation. I tell them, they'll ask me questions like, yes, do this, sidestep this and this, because I've done it before, but go for it. And then they do. And I'm like, just report back with what you think. So I just try to create a really safe environment that they feel that even if they fail, that's okay. Because I think for too long in our society, we've been taught that no one fails. Everybody fails every day. I'm a father, I'm a husband, I'm a son, I'm brother-in-law, grandson, and coworker and leader. And every part of that, there's some kind of failure or something that you could have handled just a little bit differently. But at the end of the day, I practice radical candor. It's a great book. I tell my team, we know exactly where we are at the end of the day. There is no, you don't need to be up all night with anxiety. My boss doesn't like me. I'll tell you at the end of the day, and we will fix it before we log off. Because I think that for too long too with leaders, they let it get to a head rather than having the crucial conversations. Another great book. Being able to step in and say, hey, see, there we go. Everybody should read that book, that and Radical Candor. And that book plays into your personal life, professional life, with friends, family. If life were easy, we'd all be in some utopia. But things come up, difficult conversations have to be had. And I am like, we're just going to go right to it versus let it flounder. Because if you let it flounder too long, that's when you're going to have to fire people or have massive toxicity. So I like to sidestep all that way ahead so we don't even get to that point.
So it sounds like at the end of the day, if I were to summarize back, a lot of what you guys have been doing to stand up a successful ABM program, it's a constant refinement of the ICP to make sure that we're going after the best fit customers for today. It's being fairly channeled, but always looking at where does the audience live right now and where we're getting the greatest return. I've heard a lot of people talk about this as like the arbitrage of what it costs versus what we get. And wherever that has the greatest arbitrage, we should focus all of our time there. For content perspectives, it's tight partnership to operationalize where content is distributed through RevOps, but also in partnership with sales to make sure that we're actually creating great content that is relevant for the buyer. And it sounds like just a lot of really healthy culture around experimentation and just ensuring, hey, we are not going to stay stagnant. We're not going to just rest on the same playbook that we've been running for the past 2 years. Things have changed. We need to make sure that we are adapting and not throwing out the playbook, but making sure the playbook is still relevant. It's not. Yeah. Awesome. Blow it up, move on. And when things blow up, learn the lessons, document the lessons, move on. If I were to summarize it back, the big lessons that I heard through this interview.
Yeah, you've killed it. Yeah, you did a great job. I think also on top of it, the one thing that we didn't touch on too is the intent segment of ABM. And so matching ICP with intent spikes and then nurturing that intent and or reaching out at the right time. That's one thing that we've done with all of our outbound is that we only go after accounts that are showing intent. I'm like the old days of your ICP, but you're guessing that hitting them in a buying cycle, that they're the right size, that they actually need an EHS platform, and then you're going to be talking to the correct person. So if you match intent, now you're starting to curate the content based on the type of company. And it gives you, I like to call it a cheat code, where you can hack it in a little bit versus play the guessing game and just spray and pray. Because you and I both know that it just doesn't work anymore.
Sure doesn't. Chris, this has been a very helpful deep dive into just some more of the ways around culture creation and leadership alignment for an ABM program. If you want to find out more about you, where would you point them?
Look me up on LinkedIn. UpNotch is a mentoring platform as well. They're out of Seattle, Washington. I'm not too far from there. I believe in mentoring and I believe in knowledge being shared. I've had a couple other folks tell me, like, why are you sharing? So I'm like, I'm not sharing the special sauce, because a lot of these strategies, they're not like revolutionary, just figuring out gravity with Newton and all these things. Like, it's a combination. And I can tell you the skeletons, but it's where you're putting the meat and potatoes and everything else. And that's what makes a winning thing. So I'm happy to have conversations. Find me on LinkedIn, reach out. Don't pitch me, but I will have a real conversation with you if you want.
I love it. Chris, again, thank you so much for joining me on this episode of Scrappy ABM. Thank you, listener, for joining in, tuning in. Hopefully you learned a couple things along the way. This has been Scrappy ABM, and we'll see you guys in the next one.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Scrappy ABM. If you're looking for more content just like this, I highly recommend you go subscribe to our newsletter. We release weekly playbooks so that you have the actionable ways in which you can start to build an ABM program today. Just go to scrappyabm.com/newsletter to subscribe. And if you enjoyed this episode, we'd really appreciate if you'd leave a 5-star review and hit the notification bell so you never miss an episode. I look forward to seeing you in the next one.